from Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And welcome back to our You Gotta Listen to This series. It's a series of shows we do between seasons, every time we're between seasons, where we bring on some of our friends and guests and colleagues to talk about an album that was hugely important to them or is a favorite or is just something that they want us to listen to. And our special guest is someone who's going to be a very familiar voice to probably everyone listening. Welcome to the show, Bobby Frankenberger.
Hello, thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, it's good to have you, man. You know, we've had you on every other show that I'm part of, so why not this one?
what are we going to do for your card?
That's right. What are we going to do when you're on Coverville? I can't wait to find out.
So that means Bobby's actually one show ahead of me because I've never been on TMS.
You've never been on TMS ever at
no,
all
uh-uh.
in any form?
I think I called in once for a trivia thing.
So that's crazy that you've never been on TMS.
Wow. Yeah, never. Right. I think Scott's keeping me out of that yard.
Yeah, that's his total intention.
It's all right. It's not all it's cracked up to be.
It really isn't. It's a pretty messy yard. Anyway, let's talk about the band and album that you had us listen to.
And album is kind of accurate, isn't it?
It really is because
that's all they existed for.
That's right. They existed for exactly one album. Bobby, who did you have us listen to?
It's a band called Polaris, like I just insinuated, came together specifically for this album. And the album is titled Music from the Adventures of Pete and Pete, which is a television show from the 90s, a Nickelodeon show.
Upstairs, but it's no good because you're everywhere. I can try.
Yeah, and I'd heard the name of the television show, and I'd never seen an episode of it. If you would have asked me a day ago what The Adventures of Pete and Pete were, I would have told you it was an animated show about a dog and a cat who are stuck together named Pete and Pete. And I think I'm conflating like 11 different, at least two different...
at least.
Yeah. And they're being chased shows. By a spy mouse.
Right, with three superhero girls assisting them.
And they hang out with three brothers named Ed, Eddie, and Ed.
That's right. You know, so I think that's where it came from because Ed, and Eddie is an animated show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
I think that's what I might be confusing with anyway. But so not only did you make us listen to this album, because of that, I went and listened to some other music. We'll talk about the band that some of these guys come from. And I watched my very first ever episode of The Adventures of Pete and Pete, which had freaking Marshall Crenshaw in it, of all people, like a musician that I'm a kind of a fan of from the 80s.
Yeah.
So, and looking through the list of everybody who's made an appearance on Pete and Pete, it's like, how have I never seen an episode of this show before?
Yeah, it's an amazing Nickelodeon show. It came out in that early time of Nickelodeon when everything was so sort of like that. All the shows, kids shows that were being made were so like speaking directly to the youth, but also really subversive at the same time. Mm-hmm. And you can't, we'll try hopefully not to make this a Pete and Pete episode of this show, but you kind of can't talk about this album without talking about that show because they're so interconnected.
For sure. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the band first. So the band is Polaris, as you mentioned.
Right.
And but Polaris is kind of just like you said, like a side project or a single project specifically for this album. They were all part of another band called Miracle Legion. Now, did you discover this album because of the TV show and the theme song or because of knowing about Miracle Legion and then kind of following that band into...
Or were you a fan of Speak and Say or Spell and Speak or
Speak and Spell?
Yeah.
Right. I'm a huge fan of of mid-90s bands that use speaking spells as part of their
So Limp Bizkit and these guys?
Yeah, those are the two. but no, I was...
It's hard to believe that They Might Be Giants didn't use a speaking spell at one point or another.
I know, that's true.
Sorry, go ahead.
You look good, happily near and I can sell a shoe, babe. Or have you picked your target yet? Yes, and this.
The I was introduced to this album and Polaris because of the show. I actually have listened to maybe one Miracle Legion song.
Okay.
I'm very very connected to this album in particular and these songs and this music. It's very nostalgic for me, and that's kind of a theme through their music in general, I think.
It's there's definitely a sound. I actually did go back and listen to one of the Miracle Legion albums, and
so Brian, can I talk, since Bobby mentioned the sound, I wanted to bring this up to you. It sounded like this to me as I'm listening, because this is all foreign matter to me. So when I listen to brand new things, my brain kind of makes math equations of what this is.
Sure,
and sure. I got Billy Pilgrim plus Dead Milkmen. Mm-hmm. Equals this group.
Multiply that by James.
Yes, exactly. Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh my gosh. I didn't even think of that till just now. You make the equation perfect.
Well, and there was this.
You complete me, Brian Hibbett.
Oh, yeah, it's great. You had me at whatever it was when we first started talking. There was the sound, this distinct style in the late 80s, early 90s. James, of course, House of Freaks, band that had a hit with Rocking Chair, the Trash Can Sinatras, who I'm going to be using for my, you got to listen to this. You know, they all had this kind of sound. And hearing this reminded me of what a great jangly guitar pop sound it was. Almost like a country influenced without being country at all.
That's the Billy Pilgrim I was talking about. But they also had this punk flavor to him, and his voice was a little bit like the Dead Milkmen. And I kept thinking, this is really. And then when he threw in James, man, that just makes the equation complete. It really does. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, a little bit of Gordon Gano from the Violent Femmes in his voice as well.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of. I've always thought of the Pixies when I hear this, but I mean, the sound is that, like you said, jangle pop, and it's very, it comes right out of that sort of time in the 90s and late 80s when music was getting really vulnerable and emotional. You know, Nirvana did a lot for that, and sort of ultimately kind of ended up resulting in that emo sound. But I think this is like smack dab in the middle of that with bands like Weezer and Jimmy Eat World, it makes me think of too.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Bobby now gets the award for being the first person to drop the Jimmy Eat World name on the show.
Does he get a prize or does it just stay in the middle?
It just stays right there in the center.
Gotcha. This is kind of an obvious question, but in the opening credits of The Adventures of Pete and Pete, that is Polaris performing on the lawn, I'm assuming. Right?
Yes, that's the three members of, kind of have Miracle be. Legion. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this was a great album. And it's funny to hear an album that is a soundtrack to a TV show that really just has, as far as I know, one song that appeared on the TV show, right? Just the theme? Or did all these other songs somehow make an appearance on the show?
So all of the music from that album comes up on the show over the course of its, I think, three seasons. The creators of the show commissioned Miracle Legion to write all that music specifically for the show, and they didn't write it all at once. In fact, this album didn't come out until, I think, after the show was canceled. But over the course of the three seasons, they would need a specific sound or a specific something. and they would commission the band to do it, which was their sort of like house Pete band.
Right.
And they would do it. And to an amazing effect, I'm assuming we're going to talk about some of these songs, but and everything, but they didn't just write music for this show. Like they wrote like songs, like,
yeah,
like music.
Yeah. The one episode I watched was A Hard Day's Pete, and they, younger Pete hears a Polaris song on the radio. I assume it's either a Polaris song or a Miracle Legion song, and it inspires him to start a garage band himself. And it's Summer right. Baby.
Summer Baby, yeah. It was, yes, it's,
which
it,
is
it
on
becomes
this album.
His favorite song, yeah.
Yeah.
Summer Baby, come on baby, show me the town. I didn't know that you'd be such a short visit. Once a year I noticed that you're not around. Mama says you went.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, well, let's talk about the album, because obviously it begins with the theme song, which is Hey Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, recognize that one immediately. What are some of the other highlights for you from the album?
Hey Sandy's a really good one. This Hey Sandy right at the top of the album, not only is it, of course, the literal theme song for the show, but it hits you right away with one of the really big features of this album. And these guys, Mulcahy and I can't remember the other band.
Hawkeye, Burns.
Yeah. Right.
Dave McCaffrey and Scott Boutier.
Yeah. And they're just, it, this song hits you right away with how great lyricists they are. Because, and I know Brian, that you're a lyrics guy like myself.
I totally am. Yep.
So this, what they do is they write really great lyrics that are very enigmatic and sort of like everyone debates about what they mean. And I love that in music, because it allows the listener to sort of imprint themselves into the song. And this is one of those songs. There's so many theories about this song. About, some people think it's about like the Kent State shooting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, some people think it's just about, I don't know, like all these different things, but it's right off the top. It's got that jangle pop sound and kind of sets the stage for the whole thing. And it's a great song.
It totally is, yeah. And a weird dark interpretation though of
Well, there's this one line in the song that has been for Polaris fans has always been a mysterious line that the band, of course, plays off of that, right? And sort of like stokes it by not letting anyone know what the actual real lyrics are in this line, because he kind of mumbles it, and it's can you settle to shoot me? Or some people think it's can you settle a sure bet? Hmm. And so, you know, he doesn't let anybody know what it really means.
Interesting.
And some people think, because it's talking about Sandy, which was one of the people who died in the Kent State shooting, that it must be, can you settle to shoot me, or have you picked your target yet? And that it's about her. You know, who knows what it is? I don't think it really matters.
Right.
It sort of just sets this strange sort of, like, this song establishes sort of like strange intensity that they have in a lot of their songs, that juxtaposes with this light, innocent jangle pop tone, you know?
For sure. And it's not like there's a character on the show named Sandy. I had to go look it up to see if that's where it came from. But that's when I saw the amazing guest stars. And friggin' Toby Huss was a regular on this show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love Toby Huss. Very cool. All right. So Hey Sandy, opening track, obviously. Mm-hmm. What else kind of sticks out, jumps out?
One look at her.
One of my favorites on this album is a song. It's actually the next song on the album is called She Is Staggering. Mm-hmm. And it's like this beautiful, sort of innocent, youthful song about being in love with a girl. It's really simple, and the message is not complicated. But I like it because it has this, like, a lot of their music just has all these songs do this job of capturing like a moment in youth, right? There are all these moments that we go through in our youth, and one of them is you know, having a first love, first crush, but being enraptured by that crush, right? Mm-hmm. And just not being able to escape it. And that's what this song is all about.
It's cool. Yeah. I listened to the album three times through, and that was another track I liked. We'll see if you mention the other one that I really liked, but I'll wait until you mention it. And if not, then I'll mention it. But that is a really good song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking to see here. So the deluxe. So apparently last year there was a deluxe edition of this album that's got...
Is that the one that had like an extra song on it?
Looks like it has three, although two of them are instrumentals. So Waiting for October and Coronado 2, you get an instrumental version of those.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Look at the Rocket Go. I think that's... I think that is the only... Oh, there's a bunch on here. Let's see. Waiting for October, electric guitar. So it's a new version of that song. Then an acoustic instrumental version of that song, as usual with drums. You get a whole bunch of different versions. Oh, and a cover of Holly Holy by Neil Diamond. What?
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Wait. Let's listen. This. Let's listen for the sound of the money being spent.
You'll hear at least 99 cents dropping at the end of this episode, maybe more. You know, Look at the Rocket Go might be just them separating out the bonus track from the first album or from the original release of the album. Because
yeah,
with those bonus track things, they work great when you buy a CD, but when you buy tracks by the individually, like you do these days, the tendency to say, oh my gosh, a 12-minute song, great, I'll pick it up. And then it turns out to be one song on a bonus track.
Central Daylight Time, May 21st. And Apollo 10 is behind the moon as it goes for insertion into lunar orbit.
And it's very quiet in this control room right now. A few conversations going, but not very many. Most controllers sitting at their consoles very quietly.
Spider prepares to cast off from Gumdrop to continue in Earth orbit all on its own.
And so that's probably what that is.
So I have a question, and this, I guess this is mostly for Bobby, but maybe for Brian, because I can tell you really enjoyed this. The mood that this album sets by using audio from other sources other than the band playing their instruments and singing really does set the mood, and it kind of sets a tone. Would this album be the same? Would you have the same response to it if it didn't have those other audio sources mixed in?
Yeah,
I'll let Bobby answer first.
I don't know if it would be the same, but it's really hard for me to separate my nostalgia for this album and these songs from an objective reaction to things, right? Mm-hmm. To me, the tone of the show, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, and what that show is about is so connected to this. And it makes so much sense in my head that these sort of like quirky things about this, because to me that it all feels quirky and like, oh, why did they choose to put, you know, old audio from, I guess, NASA space launches mm-hmm. into this, you know, what was a choice like that? Why did they do that? And it speaks to my sort of like geeky sentiments and I don't know. It's for me, it's definitely part of the experience.
Maybe even a little bit of your science as well. Because there's definitely a They Might Be Giants kind of science. Without the They Might Be Giants tongue-in-cheek humor, there's a very science astronomy kind of feel to it. And it's not just the cover of the album, but right. even the lyrics and the audio clips that they include, for sure. I don't know if the astronauts had a speak and spell, but if they did, then it would have sounded just like that.
It's just interesting because when bands do this, it makes you wonder if they're layering these on. I mean, they're laying it on for artistic reasons, but would these sure. songs stand as well alone as they do with the foundations that these other audio clips provide? And I'm just wondering, because for me, I found the audio clips to be quite intriguing and in some cases kind of mm-hmm. off-putting and disarming. And mm-hmm. yeah, they felt a little more, they add a level of like ominous feeling to the music. And then the songs come in and I'm like, oh, this is, like I said, this is almost Billy Pilgrim. And so the whole thing was a very kind of mental incongruity for me. And it's not that
really
I didn't like it.
It's funny that you say that as a first listener, because I think that that's what I love about the music juxtaposed with the lyrics, and I've always loved about it, is that same sort of incongruity that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I didn't like it. It's just that it was a really, like, part of me, I'm thinking about these, you know, these images and how the found audio and this extra audio fits in. And then all of a sudden it's all these kind of almost major key kind of innocent sounding songs. And then you're kind of mm-hmm. trying to figure out exactly what their goals were. And I actually mm-hmm. found myself being more distracted by what they were trying to get across to me as a listener than I was actually listening in some cases. Cause it was really thought provoking.
All right. Well, so obviously there's a lot of songs that have these kind of weird clips in there.
Yep.
You know, Shriek Back has a whole section of Apocalypse Now in, mm-hmm. in one of their songs. But there was a song by the Soup Dragons. It was actually a cover of the Rolling Stones' I'm Free. It came out in the 90s as well. And it begins with a whole clip from a movie that, you know, goes into this, we're free to do what we want to do, to be what we want to be. And then it goes right into the song. Do you, are there examples of that where you think that they are important to the track, or are there examples where you think that they're distracting
okay.
from
for,
the track?
For instance, I'm going to use the most glaring obvious one. When they use the speak and spell in Limp Bizkit, it does nothing for the song. It's an actual, it's right. like they're poking fun at both the song and the speak and spell.
Okay.
but then like there are other albums, another really good example is Kevin Moore. He uses a lot of found audio in his stuff, but it's more integrated into the song and it sometimes serves a purpose to build into the hook or the chorus or to kind of get a message across. And I spent the entire time trying to figure out why they were putting those clips with those songs. And I'm not, like sure. I said, it was just making me maybe think way too hard about what was going on, about like the structure of it, instead of just sitting back and enjoying.
It does make you wonder if the clip somehow inspired the song, or if they said, oh, we feel like we need something here. We're going to be talking about Information Society in our next season, but mm-hmm. their biggest hit has that clip of Leonard Nimoy going pure energy.
Oh yeah, the whole thing, that whole album is dipped in Star Trek.
Oh, is it? Okay, cool. Yeah. I've only ever listened to that song, which is why they're going to be on, on Soundography. But I kind of like that, and I like, well, here's the deal. I like it if I believe that there's a reason for it, if there's an inspiration that the band had because of that, and it's not just this is a really long instrumental section. Any of you have like a favorite? You want to throw some Scarface in there or something? You know, like
yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like I'll say it. There's some audio found audio drops they throw into Dream Theater songs. Like, where the hell did that come from? Why? Mm-hmm. Why do they care about 6 o'clock on a Christmas morning? I don't. but then with this, like, I think that whole idea of trying to figure out where the inspiration come and what they are trying to do actually pulled focus away from some of the enjoyment that I had from maybe just listening and enjoying. I mean, I'm just wondering if the songs needed the extra propping up.
That's so interesting for me to hear you talk about the experience with it, because I've been listening to these songs since I was a kid, because I grew up with The Adventures of Pete and Pete. And so my first experience with these songs was definitely not as a critical listener. So mm-hmm. I have had the, like, my first many listens to this music was just sitting and listening, maybe in my bedroom, staring at the ceiling. So I did just immerse myself in the music and experience it. And it wasn't until later that I actually stepped back and started to think about it. And so I came at it from a completely opposite direction. It's just really interesting to hear you talk about it as like coming at it from the other direction.
As a separate thing too, because in all the time you've listened to it, the sound, the clips and the music were just so entwined. They were one
right
for you. So that totally makes sense.
And talking about the sort of a lot of the sort of like technology and space sounding noises and found audio that they are putting into it, it always to me sort of all of this music, or at least most of it, feels very like when I'm listening to it, like I'm going on a trip, like not like a floating sort of floating through space, like a cosmic sort of, I don't know how else to explain it. Like it feels somehow like I'm floating around and listening, and it fits to me that they would be eliciting feelings and thoughts about like space travel.
Uh-huh. Didn't experience it, but I can absolutely see how you could, especially when, like I said, it's set up with all those space audio clips. And even there's a dedication on the album that it's dedicated to Astro Chimp Ham and Space Dog Laika. I'm familiar with Laika the dog. I didn't know that the chimp that got sent into space was named Ham, which is great. Cool. Well, let's. What other tracks are kind of standouts for you?
One of my, I have a lot of favorites, at least sure. Four or five favorites on here. But another one that I really like is Waiting for October.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Speaking of spending, you know, part of my life just listening and experiencing the feeling of a song, and then later coming back and thinking about it critically. This is a perfect example of one of those songs, because Waiting for October, it's very much sort of elicits this feeling of like nostalgia and a cozy feeling. It was in the Halloween episode of Pete and Pete, I think it was called Halloweeny. And and it comes at the end of the song, and it's very much a kind of this cozy fall, leaves changing color, autumn feeling. But when you dig in and listen to the lyrics, it's actually a song that is about this. It's referencing a Billy Graham concert thing in Central Park in 1991.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
And,
all right.
Yeah. And there's this guy outside that of this concert. And this happened during the concert. He was standing outside the concert preaching like end of the world kind of stuff, saying that the world was going to end on October 28th, 1999. And that's what this song is about. It's sort of written from like the perspective of that guy, and he's waiting for October, and he's gonna learn to fly. Like, I'm in the book, and I'll be learning how to fly as one of the. And he's talking about the Bible and how everyone's gonna be raptured and become angels and all this kind of stuff. And it's like a really serious story about a guy who thinks that God is coming to destroy the world, and he's looking forward to it. But it's also in this very innocent song that was put in a show on an episode about, like, you know, I can't wait until Halloween gets here.
Right. Yeah. Nice little weird kind of balancing of light and heavy there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. It's very cool. Well, I don't know if you're going to get to mine. You might still, but
let's hear it. I want to hear yours.
Saturnine.
I see sunshine, you be Saturnine.
was a jump out track, which just happens to be the fourth track after the three you mentioned.
I know, we've been going in order somehow.
We have been, yeah. So we have seven more, everybody. Stick around. But no, that one, that's the only track I replayed during the three listen-throughs, because that it's the one I went back to. And I mean, I replayed the whole album three times, but this one I played a fourth time. For whatever reason, it just connected with me. And it's another love song kind of thing. At least I translate it as. And just has a different style vocal to it. I don't know if it's a different one of the other guys in Miracle Legion / Polaris singing it, but it sounded a little bit different to me. And I think that's why it might have stood out.
Yeah, that one has a really strong GarageBand feel for me. And, mm-hmm. and definitely, I mentioned the Pixies earlier. That's the one that always reminds me of the Pixies.
I can totally see that. Yeah.
It's a pretty good song. No, that's not one of my favorites. So I'm glad I'm glad you brought that one up.
Apparently, you did it the right time, too. Have you ever gotten to see these guys? I guess if you've only heard one Miracle Legion song, which surprises me. Actually, let's ask that question. Let's get off on a little tiny bit of a tangent there. It surprises me that as much as you like this album, that you haven't seeked out more music by the people who made it.
So I see why you would be surprised by that. But but I think part of it is... when I discovered Polaris was when I was a kid, and this is in, you know, the 90s, back before it was not as easy to just go online and, you know, look up
music. Yeah, sure.
And so I didn't actually even realize until a few years ago that this was not, that the Miracle Legion band existed outside of Polaris. And so to me, the entire thing was just this one band that made one album and all the songs were on this show. And when I learned about that when I was a kid, you know how all these things that you learn when you're young, when you're a kid, and then you get older, you just don't question them.
Yeah. Yeah.
and it's just exists as a fact in your brain. And that's what this was. So for the longest time, it just, I never thought to think like why would this band come together and make this album for the show and not exist or have any other songs or do anything else? It was just like, oh, well, I love these songs. You know, like, why look deeper into it? I love it.
Sure. Did you go looking for, like, when you were at a record store or something, would you go into the Polaris or go to the P's and look for more stuff by Polaris? Or did you knew that this was the only thing that ever released?
So funny you say that. Yes, I actually did for a long time look for other Polaris stuff. Yeah. And couldn't find it, and sort of ties into a funny story about, like, for a long time I was the genesis of my lyrics snobbery, and when I was a kid, one of my introduction to this band as a group was actually through the song Coronado 2. So Coronado 2 it was on their, before they had the full album, they had this three song, I don't know if this is something that only they called, I've never heard the word before outside of the context of Polaris, but they had this ka-single. Is that a thing?
That's a thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I remember ka-singles. I had a box of them when I was a kid.
One of the worst portmanteaus ever, if you ask me. Oh, yeah. Ka-single. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It kind of tells you exactly what it is, right?
Well, okay, it does, but it just feels like such an awkward word.
It is a dumb word.
Ka-single, ka-single.
So they had this ka-single, which was three songs from The Adventures of Pete and Pete, and you could get it by ordering it from through a cereal box.
Oh, right? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so if you're a fan, like, you'd get it. And this, I didn't know about this at the time. I actually didn't get the cereal box that you could order it through. But when I was in the mid to late 90s, whenever the show was on and I was a kid, There's this guy who lived in the neighborhood, and I think he must have been like a senior in high school, and I was in middle school. And so he was like this older, cool dude. He like played the electric guitar. And so I thought he was like a badass.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And so I would go, and he'd be hanging out in his garage with his friends, you know, like smoking cigarettes when his parents weren't home. And so I'd go and hang out while he had the garage door open. And he tolerated me, I guess, but he was just like the coolest guy. And I'm looking through the music that he has, because he's like this music guy. So whatever he's listening to must be awesome. And he has this single. And I saw The Adventures of Pete and Pete on the cassette tape. And I was like, whoa.
He's not as cool as I thought he was.
I was like, oh, you like Pete and Pete too. And he was like, he tried to play it off, right?
No, it's my sister's. It's my little sister's cassette.
Well, he was like, well, I don't watch the show, but let me tell you. And so he told me all about the music and how awesome it was. and he plays this song for me, Coronado 2. Okay. And he's telling me all about the song. And I was like, yeah, I know that song. I've heard it on the show. And he was like, well, you know, this song is actually about a girl who cheated on her boyfriend with all of the guy's friends. And they had sex. And then his friends just kept telling him about it, and she just kept cheating on him. And I was like, this blew my mind. I'd never thought about lyrics in this way before.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And I was like, how could this, this song about like, you know, sex could be like on this Nickelodeon show that I watched? And so forever my life was changed. And I think that's really what brought me into Polaris for the very first time. And this is before the album was even released. Well, this was at a time when there were things like Rocco's Modern Life, which had a bunch of like innuendo humor. And also, you know, of course, Ren and Stimpy. So
do you think it's talking about those lyrics, do you think it's tougher now to get that experience of deciding what you think the lyrics mean, when the internet is just a few clicks away and you can usually search for the entire lyric, so you don't have to try and translate them yourselves or transpose them onto a piece of paper. And B, sometimes you can even find an interview where the artist says what the meaning is behind it. Because I'm looking at the lyrics right now of Coronado 2, and I don't know where your buddy got that. But it's definitely a translation, something that must have been going on in his own life with maybe a girl cheating on him, and he kind of lumped it onto this song.
Yeah. So to answer your first question, I think you're right, because I've had that experience recently where I'm just like, I wonder what this song means, and I just look it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
It's funny, you also mentioned They Might Be Giants. They're a huge, I'm a huge fan of theirs for similar reasons, because of lyrics. And growing up, I did the same thing that you were just describing, which was sitting and just thinking. All you could do is think about it.
Yeah, you had to listen to the lyrics and think of what they possibly were in your own head without Googling Music Match or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then trying to translate them yourself. Yeah.
But Coronado 2 has the best opening lines in a song, if you think about it from the perspective of my cool guy friend's interpretation.
It totally does.
It's kind of a low blow, not the one I got, but the one you gave.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, if that's what the song means, and again, I am definitely someone who prescribes to the idea that the song means what it means to you,
sure,
right?
Sure.
But if that's what the song means, like those are beautifully clever lyrics, I think.
They really are. Yeah. Very cool. And I wonder what box of cereal he had to finish to get the Kissingle for that you found in his collection there.
Honeycomb.
I'm sure it was. Yeah.
It had to be. Had to be Honeycomb. This is very cool. Apparently the band has done reunion concerts.
Yes.
In 2015, 2016, or no, 2014. There it is right there in Chicago.
Which in a bunch of cities too, because I never went to any of them, but I read about that, and there are a lot more cities than you might think for a show that I know a lot of people have never either heard of or just heard of and not actually watched. So
there's even a 2-disc set of Mark Mulcahy's music being covered by other people. Although I looked, there's only one song that's Polaris. The rest of it is Miracle Legion, but still, I mean, this is a band that I've never heard of either. And to have an entire double disc set of people covering them, this is like one of the uncovered gems of music, right? That other bands know about and love, but maybe haven't reached the public popularity yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Because it's a decent lineup of people. Tom York, Michael Stipe, Dinosaur Jr., Frank Black of the Pixies. Like, all of these are people covering songs on this tribute. It's like, oh, wow, okay. Well, this apparently is a band that I wish I'd heard of sooner, I guess.
Yeah, well, again, like, the music, the album didn't come out until much longer after what it was made for was over.
Right, right.
Maybe not much long after, but it wasn't until Pete and Pete was canceled that the album came out. And so, like, who are you going to market it to?
Sure.
You're going to market it to the fans of the show, which is not currently airing anymore. And, you know, so I think it's just one of those, like, one of those things that was one of those gems that was just lost in the wind, you know?
For sure. If you were to hear that Miracle Legion was going to be, or specifically Polaris, because these are Polaris, or it was a Polaris reunion tour. Would you go see it if it was somewhere nearby, knowing that they're going to be performing every song from that album, basically?
Oh, 100%, right? Because that's what you always want when you go see like your favorite band. You want them to play your favorite songs.
Exactly. Don't do any of the new stuff. Don't if you say, here's a song from our new album, I'm sitting down. But if you say, yes, we're going to do this album that you loved in its entirety, then I'm in 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be there.
Very cool. Well, awesome. Well, any last things that we want to throw out?
I think so my appeal to anyone who's listening who's never heard of this before to go out and listen to it is not just if you're a fan of Pete and Pete. If you're a fan of Pete and Pete, this is a no-brainer. Go out and listen, because it'll bring you right back to that. But it's this album is steeped in nostalgia. And that's like, if I had to use one word to describe what this album does, is nostalgia. It's very much trying to highlight these moments in youth and not patronize those moments like some music can do. Not patronize the youth. It sort of gives homage or special attention to and the gravity that the feelings you have when you're young deserve to the people who are feeling them. You know, like being young or crazy. It's like. Being young is crazy. It's confusing and it's a shitty time. emotionally, it can be. And this soundtrack sort of acknowledges that and takes it seriously. And that's why I've always liked it. It always gives me like those chills that you get from nostalgia.
Yeah. And I, you know, never even having heard it, I had a nostalgia for that late 80s, early 90s sound too, or you know, bands I mentioned. So this was a cool discovery, thanks to you.
Well, awesome. I'm glad.
Very cool. Hammond, anything?
No, I actually really enjoyed this. I mean, and I came into it with a fair amount of trepidation because when I hit play on it, I'm like, what the hell did Bobby get us into? But as the album progressed, yeah. I really started, I mean, aside from being distracted with trying to figure out the hows and the whys of the choices they made, I found myself really enjoying it and connecting it to things that I enjoy outside of this. Like I said, you know, the bands that I mentioned. And so it fit nicely in a place in my brain, but I still have lots of questions I'd love to ask Pete and Pete about.
Yeah. Pete and Pete, these questions for the two of you. Yeah. No, very cool. Well, Bobby, thank you so much for being part of this. Where do you want us to direct people to who listen to this and for some reason haven't heard of you mentioned on all of our other shows?
Well, if this is the first time you're hearing my voice, I have a podcast called All Around Science. That's the main thing I do. It's a weekly science podcast where we just, me and my co-host Maura, just geek out about sciencey stuff. We just talk about what's going on in science news and just unabashedly, excitedly tell you all the things that we think are cool in science and why we think that you should think they're cool too.
Excellent.
It's all around science.
It goes well with this, and I hope that at some point you've got a Where Are They Now episode with Space Chimp Ham and Space Dog Laika.
Maybe you could have Laika do a journal entry, like 10 minutes of a journal entry.
There's an ANTP reference right there. Well done. Very good. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for supporting the Patreon. If you support the Patreon, follow us on Twitter at The Soundography. Visit our website, soundography.com. And we'll see you for the next episode of Soundography's You Gotta Listen to This.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.